And for me, these experiences were very subtle, but they really made me feel that I wasn't quite accepted in the spaces that I was in.
You've just heard from Nadia Riepenhausen, Senior Communications Manager, Digital and IT, the Adecco Group, speaking about her experience with microaggressions in the workplace. Welcome back to Future of Work Conversations, a podcast all about the intersection of human talent and leadership in the shifting world of work. In this episode, Ms. Riepenhausen speaks with Reshma Ramachandran, Chief Transformation Officer at the Adecco Group, about microaggressions in the workplace, the impact on their mental health, and how they rise above these comments. Let's dive in.
Hi, Nadia. It is so good to sit here and continue the conversations that we've always had on the corridors. You know, we have always spoken about both of us being immigrants in Switzerland and probably in other countries that we have lived in, and what our experiences, both in a country where we are immigrants, but also in an organization where we are then, you know, carrying forward that immigration or immigrant mindset itself. So just getting started on this conversation, how has your experience been in Switzerland as an immigrant?
Thanks, Reshma. It's good to be able to pick up this topic with you. And we've had many discussions on that topic and things that we can both relate to. So I've lived in Switzerland for about 13 years. And I've lived in other countries like the UK and the US. But in Switzerland, especially, the feeling of being other or being felt, or the feeling that you don't quite belong, has been really acute in Switzerland. And it's a journey that I've had to really work hard on to overcome. So I would say the thing that sticks out to me the most of my journey here in Switzerland is microaggressions. So the term microaggressions, just by its very nature, implies something that is subtle, but its impact is felt. And I think microaggressions occur typically when it comes to race, but they can also occur when it comes to gender. And for me, these experiences were very subtle, but they really made me feel that I wasn't quite accepted in the spaces that I was in. So examples of it would be, one of the ones that really comes to mind is somebody asking me, am I allowed to go to work with my hair like this? And my hair has always been something that I'm really proud of. It's a huge part of my identity. So when the person said it, I thought, well, I guess they're saying that the way that I look doesn't fit into a corporate space. And typically how I've dealt with these type of incidences in the past is to use my sarcasm, my humor as a bit of a defense mechanism. So I actually said to this person, well, are you allowed to go to work with that face? Which was, you know, a sarcastic comment. But my point was to highlight that, well, just as much as this is my hair, you know, your face is your face, and we should be able to show up how we are. So this is an example of a small microaggression. There's other occurrences that have happened where people will comment on my accent, the fact that I come from Africa and I speak English really well, which to me as a native English speaker is somewhat offensive, and of course I should speak it well. Another comment that comes to mind is when I worked in a Swiss bank and I was asked, how does an African get to sit here at a Swiss bank? Implying that this is not a space that I should occupy. So these incidences, although they're small and they're not overt, they started to wear down my spirit, you know, where I felt not so confident and able to speak up in public. It made me want to play small and not be so visible. So that's something that I've really had to do a lot of work to overcome.
Yeah, and you know, it's very interesting you talk about microaggressions, because I don't think that's a term that is very much used in, I would say, mainly in Europe. It's a term that was first coined in the US, because I think typically when we talk about race and discriminations because of race, US is known for also having the data. Europe, typically, we don't, unfortunately, we don't have the data. And it's very interesting, and I want to dwell a little deeper into that is, you know, all of this, and microaggressions being one of them, all of this, which where we can't really show up as ourselves, has also got an impact on the mental health.
Definitely.
For me, like how I look at it is, you know, we are not two different individuals. There is no individual outside of work. And the moment you walk in through a door, whatever the organization be, you walk in through that door, there is not another individual. It's the same individual. So you might be facing discrimination, microaggressions, you know, the lack of inclusion within the society. And once you walk in, you are actually carrying that baggage. And when some people say it, so when you talk about the hair or you talk about the English, it's for every person who says it, there is also 9 people who don't say it explicitly. Mm. And unfortunately, the challenge that I feel that people like us, who don't necessarily feel fit in, we also have experiences outside of the work, which means that, as I said, we bring in that baggage inside of work. And it starts to actually wear us down. So I wanted to delve also a little deeper into that in terms of, you know, do you also feel the same as I feel that, yes, it does have an impact on mental health as well?
Definitely. I think, like I mentioned, for me, it meant that I started to play small. And I found it really difficult to speak out, even in meetings. When I had to present, I found myself trying to avoid doing that, mainly because I didn't want to be in the spotlight. And I felt, even like you mentioned, you know, certain things are said either intentionally or they're not intended to be offensive. But obviously, there's also things that are not said. And I just became hypervigilant and aware of my presence. And that meant that I lost a little bit of my confidence, a little bit of my sparkle, you know, and I really had to work hard to overcome that. And I think from a mental health perspective, how I chose to deal with it was to confront. So sit a person down and tell them why something is offensive. And that's not easy. You're not quite sure of the outcome. But I think for me, I've also chosen to work in spaces where I feel welcomed and celebrated, and choose to walk away from spaces where I don't. So not every company is the right fit for you, and you are not the right fit for every company. And I think that's a choice that you need to make, that you need to try to find spaces both inside and outside of work where you feel welcomed. Find your tribe, find the people that resonate with you. But I'd like to ask you, how did you overcome that? Like, how did it impact your mental health, and what have you done to overcome that?
So I think there are two parts to that answer. One is me as an individual, and I would say the second part is me as a leader. So I will go with the me as an individual first. So I absolutely resonate with what you say. You know, I my favorite phrase is walk away from spaces and people whom you have outgrown. And this goes back to the respect. So if you're not respected for the skills that we bring in, there's no point actually staying in those spaces and with that group of people. And as an individual, I have walked away, I would say. And as an individual, again, I think it's more finding your own coping mechanism. So for me, power of conversations have helped. So, you know, and this is the reason why we have had so many of the corridor conversations. It's finding like-minded people. And it's not a question of finding that pleasure in knowing that someone else is going through the same pain, but it's actually finding that power in that conversation of saying, you know, Nadia, your coping mechanism is very different from mine, but nonetheless, we can actually learn from each other's strength. I absolutely love the sarcasm or the dark humor, as I would like to call it, how you use it and how you have been able to deal with it. Something which I have not done. I have to say that I've been times when I've been bitter about it. And I really like the way you use humor to tackle these situations, or sitting down people and talking to them about how it actually impacts you. So this, I would say, is more on an individual perspective. And I think for me, why I wanted to address the second part of that question is, as a leader, how do I create inclusive spaces? So I would start with the psychological safety. I think all of us are different, and it's not just, you know, we look different for sure. However, it's not just about being different in that sense. It's each one of us have things going outside of work. You know, I've worked with people who were going through a divorce, who were dealing with a tough situation at home, who were actually dealing with a child on suicide watch. And these are things you just don't know what their journey is. You just don't know what they're going through. So for me, as a leader, it's really important to create that safe space where you're also able to come and speak up about what is it that you're going through, and not necessarily looking at it as a weakness. And, you know, personally, again, I've gone through a burnout situation where, again, I think being a immigrant woman of color has been a challenge. It definitely has had impact on my mental health. But beyond that, you know, I used to work in an industry which was extremely male dominated. So you're one of the only women, and at that you are a woman of color. So your expectations from you are very high. You also go through the imposter syndrome that am I good enough, especially when people look at you as you don't deserve that seat at the table. So the pressure is more. And I've gone through a burnout. And when I have spoken out aloud about the burnout, I was also told that, you know, then you are not leadership material because you can't deal with stress. And I think both at a societal level and organizational level, there is a taboo around, unfortunately, there is a taboo around mental health and how much can you talk about it. So for me as a leader, it's really important that we create that psychologically safe space where people can actually come and talk about not just what is happening at work. Definitely, you know, COVID has created a very different dynamics at the workplace, but also independent of what that change in dynamics has been, people go through different things in their life. And we need to create that safe space where, you know, you are comfortable coming and talking about it. And we acknowledge it and not look at it as a weakness.
Thanks, Rashma. I think it takes a lot for a leader to be able to share something like a burnout. I think it's especially in a leadership role, it's, you know, it's perceived that you need to be the strong one and that you're not impacted by something like that. So I think being able to share that, and that's part of psychological safety, is being able to be vulnerable and share your experiences so that other people feel comfortable to share their stories as well. And I think from my side, where I felt actually psychologically safe was when I started at the Adecco Group. So I started at the Adecco Group in the midst of the pandemic. I was separating from my husband and literally was living in an apartment on an air mattress and not much else. And I felt safe enough to share with my line manager, look, this is what I'm going through. I'm not at my finest, but just being able to share that felt to me like I can be authentic. I can show up for my job, do the best, but they know that I'm going through a difficult time. So that was really, you know, really meaningful to me. And I think it also set off how I felt working in this environment. I felt I can show up as myself and I feel somewhat empowered. It's not to say that the microaggressions don't still happen, but I think I found my confidence again. I found my voice again. Sitting here with you even is overcoming, you know, one of those issues that I had previously of speaking out. So yeah, I think I felt somewhat supported in this space, but I think there's a lot more that organizations can do. So I would ask you, what do you think is the responsibility of an organization when it comes to mental health and creating inclusive spaces?
So, I think, and you're touching upon a very, very important topic, right? It's us as individuals. So we have spoken about, you know, what can we as individuals do when we don't feel included? So here is where, I absolutely love how you said, you know, about walking away from people and spaces that don't fit us anymore, power of conversations, finding your own coping strategy and coping mechanism. So these are individuals, but there's only so much individual coping can actually take us. And this is where I do strongly believe that organizations have a responsibility. And my view is that organizations are a reflection of the society. And it's probably a chicken and egg story. You know, where does the change happen first? Is it the society or is it the organization? Since it's an organization, it's a reflection of the society, organizations can be role models in terms of showing how inclusive spaces can be created. And my experience working with several organizations in three different continents is that, you know, at the crux of it comes leadership. And when I say leadership, it's really about how leaders really walk the talk. If leaders are not vulnerable enough to accept, again, when we talk about burnout, when we actually talk about mental health, what do we do to protect our mental health? And if we are not open about sharing those, it's really hard to expect that the employees in the organization would be comfortable enough to talk about those things. So that I would say is like really starts with the leadership. And then the second thing I would say is the empathy. So, you know, with the empathy and compassion, because empathy is understanding what you're going through. Compassion would be to act on it. It's really about understanding individuals as individuals. Again, all of our stories are very different. It's hard. And I always, you know, one of my favorite sayings is diversity is easy, inclusion is hard. And in if you need to be inclusive, you have to be willing to take that hard path where you have to spend time and with individuals and look at each person as an individual, understanding that their story, their journey is different. If we actually have both leadership, and I would say combine it both and say, you know, it's really about empathetic leadership, I do believe that organizations can create safe spaces, and safe spaces would give more of inclusion, and inclusion would give more of all of us feeling belonging at work. And I again love the story that you said about the Edeco group when you joined. And I have to say my experience has been the same in terms of how we look at individuals as individuals and not label them, you know, our motto as well as that, you know, talent without label. So it's really not putting a label to someone, but actually looking each of us for the skills that we bring in. So that's a good segue for me to actually come back to mental health at a, I would say, broader sense. We spoke about inclusion and, you know, how being different definitely has a huge impact on our mental health. But what's your take also on mental health at a broader scale, at a broader level?
I think that's an interesting question, and it's something that I reflected on earlier. I think for me, what I've prioritized is self-care. And this is this kind of Instagram hashtag self-care kind of word. But for me, I've really tried to practice that I can't show up as my best self if I'm not taking care of me. And based on my previous experiences in other organizations, where I, you know, my mental health was impacted and I really wasn't taking care of myself. So that to me is the absolute number one priority is self-care. And then I think as another step, I've recently stepped into a role where I'm a line manager, where I'm responsible for a team. And that's something that's fairly new for me. And I think it's wanting to create the same safe space that's been created for me, for them. So allowing them to feel free to share opinions, to share what's happening, going on with them in their lives, that I have a better understanding of how to approach them, how to tackle challenges within the team. I think, you know, in a broader sense, what I've learned since my previous experiences and previous roles is about speaking up and being authentic and having honest conversations. And that's been really hard, you know, because you don't know how those conversations are going to be received. Will there be retaliation? Are there negative consequences as a result of speaking your truth? But that's something that I've made absolutely something that I will not compromise on, and I'm unapologetic about, is having honest conversations and also showing up authentically. And I think that that's something that I can apply both at work and outside of work as well, is just being honest and showing up authentically. So, yeah, that's what I'm practicing for now.
Yeah, and that's amazing. And I really want to pick up on the self-care part because, you know, that's also something that I feel I want to leave the conversation that we're having today also with respect to something that is concrete and tangible. It's really, and I would take self-care a slightly beyond. It's more about self-love. Mm-hmm. And I do feel that, again, I say from my experiences of being the different person in the room, sometimes it's hard to like yourself because, you know, everyone in the room looks very different to you. Everyone has got very different things to say. And sometimes I also feel I get left out in the conversation because I can't relate to certain things that is being said in the room. And then that's when you start, you know, I don't know at what point you start actually questioning yourself, and that slowly the self-love is lost. So I would say, you know, I like what you said about self-care, but prior to that, it's really about loving yourself and the authenticity that you mentioned, you know, and I absolutely love how you show up in your hair, in your original hair, and not wanting to make modifications to that, because it's really then first accepting us as ourselves, loving ourselves, and then making sure that we put the self-care in place to protect that. And I do also feel like at an organizational level, this is really good in terms of some of the practices that we have. Again, as I said, I really love the fact that we look at talent without labels. So we are encouraging people to come as themselves, show up as themselves, and we can have that honest, authentic conversations.
No, I agree. And I think, yeah, especially from a leadership perspective, what you've shared, I think it's really meaningful. I think the self-love, feeling really confident in yourself, I think that's been a huge journey for me. I think it's a continuing journey. But I what you've said has really resonated with me. And I'm really grateful to have this conversation with you.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Future of Work Conversations. For more information about the Edeco Group and the latest insights on the world of work, head to our website at www.theedecogroup.com. Did you like the episode? Be sure to like and subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast app. If you have any questions or topics you would like us to explore, please email us at futureofwork@adecogroup.com. Don't worry, we don't spam. Until next time, thanks for listening.